You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
As we emerge weakened from another weekend as a people, as a country, you feel the weight of it draped on you again, right? The world weariness, this film of exhausted depression from fighting all these daily fights that stretch endlessly from an American woman's womb now all the way to Ukraine. Open your eyes in the morning. If you could sleep, turn on any television, and here's but a partial list of what you will see under attack today. The earth is under attack, from flooding to fire. Freedom is under attack. Democracy is under attack. Decency is under attack. Women are obviously under attack. Black people are obviously under attack. Immigrants, exiles, Jews, Asians, Muslims, the poor, gays are under attack, lesbians, bisexuals, the transgender, anything or anyone who can be framed as the other to further foment fear is under attack. Our kids are under attack. Our mothers, wives, girlfriends, sisters, daughters, the things we love, and the things we need, your bank account, your gas tank, your rent, your oceans, your farms, your futures, your free speech is under attack, fair elections, facts, the free press, the Constitution, the Capitol building is under attack. We the people are under attack. Whatever you thought and dreamed this country was or could be is very much under attack. And you know what gets buried and lost under all that rubble, right? Your peace. And your power. This is impossible to miss as we march in the streets, as we can't stop fighting each other, as everything becomes about the distraction techniques and politics, and America looks a little dumber and a little more embarrassing by the day. None of us seem to be living in the country we thought we were living in. All of us, Republicans, Democrats, everyone, feel threatened, even those in power. The feeling of being threatened is somehow both the reason that we all fight and one of the few things we all have in common. But this isn't about Republicans and Democrats. Or rather, if it is about Republicans, then it must also be about Democrats. Americans have 1 million options on coffee flavors and water, but only two real political parties, so we get the leadership we deserve or lack thereof. Republicans so very ruthless about winning the dirtiest fights. Democrats so very weak in losing them. The Democrats could have put Roe into law numerous times, but instead decided to fundraise off it. That's one of the dirtiest secrets here, that the government and media are almost entirely choked and controlled by big money. The laughing billionaires rocket their toys towards space without paying taxes and watch from above as the rest of us do what desperate animals do in a confined environment. We have begun eating each other. This is how you erode principles with the metronomic consistency of waves upon a shore. Make the daily fight so hard in so many ways and places that you get too tired and distracted and helpless and hopeless to even get to the up in uprising again. The more you cry for equality, the more the power gets more annoyed by the cry than the inequality. Women didn't help right our rights. They didn't get the right to vote until more than 12 decades later. And so you've seen the legal reaction to the move toward progress, empowerment, and equality for them. Against the will of the citizens in a voting democracy, Me Too just got sent the hell back to 1972. So now the unborn are more protected than they were. The born, not so much. Congratulations, America. The fetus is now safer in the womb than it is 5 years later when it can be sent off to school and slaughtered. The latest appalling indignity is that the Republican Party, as Donald Trump once said on tape at the start of his 10,000 Watergates, has grabbed American women by the by law of our land against the will of the voting people. An American woman now has less agency over her body, life, and future than her government, and than she did four decades ago. Such a particularly evil disguise, this one, grabbing at religion and the law and pretending it's about prenatal protection of the fetus instead of the power, as if leathery demon fossil Mitch McConnell cares about the Bible as anything other than a political weapon that bludgeons anything that threatens his establishment, his rule, his power, his version of we the people that was obviously written by only his version of people. Power is his God. But Jesus, your powerlessness feeds his unholy spirit. When gun laws and abortion laws become ingredients in another fight filled with fear, you can feel freedom groan under the weight as we watch history rewritten so that what governs us morphs not slowly from we the people to we the politicians. And then the police become state militia, as you were reminded this weekend, and all of those videos of abortion protesters being dragged face over asphalt away from the peaceful part of the fight. A pandemic taught us that people are even more selfish than we thought, so it would make sense that the most powerful in politics, the people chosen by us, the people we've given power, would in turn be our representatives in that regard, the most selfish among us. And that we'd now get dragged marching as a country toward living in a handmaid's tale. It was always one of the most grotesque tools in the Trump toolbox to flood your timeline with so much scandal that you couldn't even keep up, leaving you numb to it and him somehow more immune to it. Shamelessness, a magic carpet that now allows politicians to rise above their own misdeeds instead of being crippled by them. You cannot feel disgrace if you eliminate any and all of the grace. The White House is America's most valuable home, 132 rooms, 18 acres, valued at over $400 million. We gave it to him. And he not only ransacked it for all of its valuables, but while you were yelling about him urinating on the Constitution in the Oval Office, he was already shitting on the carpet in the library. And the party has tolerated an insurrection, and the Supreme Court turns into a policy arm now instead of a judicial branch. Trump's most echoing victory is that he got his judges. You control the law, you control the punishment. You control the punishment, you control the people. You control the people, you control the power. It's not a coincidence that he came to be as a violent reaction to a black man in what has always been the White House. Historically, by sea to shining sea law, the white man has always been by far the least under attack because, of course, he's the one who designed the system and the rules. But he feels very much under attack now, doesn't he? Because of those tired cries of minorities demanding decency and equality. And this is the result when the ones who make the rules feel threatened by the people beneath them being ruled. Your basic human rights, our basic human rights, become our country's basic human wrongs.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings.
Why are you listening to this show?
The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
Dan Le Batard.
How do people always go missing in the mountains? Don't go to the mountains. And by the way, I don't want to bring race into it. This is the most white people thing ever. Going missing in the middle of the mountains. It's the strangest thing. You go by yourself. You don't take a radio. You don't take a phone. You're missing for 4 days, and they find you like 10 years later covered in snow. And it's like, don't go by yourself. If you're going to go on a trail, don't go by yourself.
Stugatz.
Put it on the poll. Is it the whitest person thing ever, I believe is what you called it? Going into the woods by yourself. Is going into the woods by yourself.
I can't disagree with that, man.
I mean, so black people don't camp?
Yeah, black people don't hike. They don't camp. They don't go out into the woods.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
We're starting with Big Suey today because we have what is, I believe, total chaos around here in our scheduling. Roy, I turn on my television last night. He's wandering around the ice of the Stanley Cup Final. And
was he really?
Yes, he's wandering. Huh. He's wandering around the ice, and everyone was sending us photos of Roy wandering around on the ice. How do you think they recognized it?
He was wearing a green jacket. Ah. Really stood out.
Roy's on his way back. Mike is bombing down the highway because, as a surprise, he ended up there last night to finally see those vampires buried. And I will celebrate them in a moment because the Kansas City Chiefs, like Tyreek Hill and Chandler Jones, were talking about 5 championships, 10 championships. Like what the Lightning just did, 11 straight playoff series. And then what it takes to beat them at the end is the very best of the very best being the very best. Like that is a worthy, worthy champion. And Mike wanted to see that champion. Mike actually wanted his futures. Mike was rooting for Game 7. So Mike is again a loser.
And I found myself rooting for Tampa at the end. I don't know if it's just because maybe I wanted to see a good series. Like, overall in the series, I obviously wanted Colorado to win. But last night, found myself rooting for Tampa. And then after the game, they were so emotional. You wouldn't think that after winning 2, you'd be like, all right, we're good. You guys have this one. Fat Pat was, like, literally crying in the press conference. It was just weird how hard they... I know it's weird because they wanted their professionals. It was weird how demoralized they were after winning 2 in a row.
Did you not see... You say it's weird, and it's because we don't understand. These people are physically broken from taking pucks all over their body. Everybody was in horrible pain. It's weird that you care that much. Go out there and get hit at 100 miles an hour again and again with a puck and have your leg falling off while you play in Game 6 because you're trying to get to Game 7. Strange that you care so much about that you would cry afterwards.
It is wild because people think the aggressiveness of hockey is all checking. The scariest shit in hockey is the guy sliding across the ice in the middle of like right before a slap shot. Like that's people don't really think about it. People it's just lunacy. Think of fighting it's, and checking, but it's really the shots in the face you take from a puck that can do the damage.
It's like literally getting shot by a gun. Yeah. It's like this thing is just coming like so it. Fast. Look, well, we have actually one right here. Like Dan, you want me to throw it at you?
I don't think it's literally like getting shot in the close. Face
and we
with
have a
gun,
puck, not a gun.
Otherwise there would be corpses.
Well, all you know, over. You know what I mean?
Excellent start to your week, Tony. And I was beginning to
say... It was a good start. We're here.
Come on.
We
next
come
time
here, man.
Next time it's like metaphorically taking a bullet.
We come here, man.
Rather than literally.
You do come here, man. I don't know where Stugatz is. Jessica is not here today. Billy's on a cruise somewhere. Amin is supposed to be here, but he's doing another one of these red-eye things. He's a lunatic. He comes in at 6 o'clock in the morning and is late all the time. But the thing that I wanted to talk to the group about today, that something that's happening in media that I'm really enjoying, even as it becomes dumber and dumber and dumber. It's not just Skip Bayless saying, I'm going to keep calling him Westbrook, and Westbrook saying, don't say anything on Twitter that you wouldn't say to my face. And then Bayless doing the move of, come on my podcast. We could talk about how you're the most over paid player.
It's
in the
not
sport.
Undisputed anymore. I mean, they said undisputed or my pop, but he's throwing in that. He's legend in that podcast. Exactly.
But on top of that, so you've got this wrestling outfit over here, and this is what gets birthed by all of the combination of that league made stars. And then the next thing we did is we fed off the soap opera stories for 15 years and Kendrick Perkins getting infuriated by that and saying, look, this is a new sign of disrespect here. You can do a lot of different things in the entertainment business, but what you won't do is that, and everyone knows that you're not about fighting. So now we've turned it into that as spectacle, as entertainment, and lines are going to be crossed, and Draymond's going to be rewarded for the same things Bayless is rewarded for, and you can judge it, you could be discerning, or you could just accept that this is the new form of entertainment in sports media. When Draymond Green says new media, he means that he's willing to do that, but also his basketball analysis, what he's fed up with is that these people aren't as good analyzing basketball as he is. They're just not.
And, but Kendrick Perkins played.
He played, but Draymond does a good job of dismissing and disparaging the way that he played.
Well, I think he's been critical. Like, Draymond, this is all emotion here. Draymond, I mean, Kendrick Perkins was critical of Draymond, so that's why Draymond, like, Kendrick is new media. He's a player breaking down the game. Draymond just doesn't like him because he said some shit about him.
So you can only be the elite athlete and then be that as a commentator. So you can't be an okay athlete and be a commentator. That's not good enough.
Draymond is going to disparage at every turn. It is good for his business, and there is no disputing that his business is good. I just present in front of the audience as entertainment. This is much different than how Tim Legler would do it. Like, if you give over your basketball operations to Kendrick Perkins, this is how some of this stuff is going to spill all over the place, because Kendrick Perkins, one of his, he's authentic and he's not afraid of anybody and he speaks more freely than most athletes do.
But Tim Legler is on SportsCenter with SVP after every game doing exactly the kind of basketball breakdown that Draymond Green is apparently pining for. I'm not entirely sure that that's what Draymond Green is pining for. Otherwise, he wouldn't make headlines by starting fights with people. Because that's very much old media. Old media is clickbait and headlines and having a go at people that are your critics. I agree with Chris. I think this is an exercising of a personal vendetta or personal vendettas. But
Kendrick Perkins is good. Not to cut you off, I'm sorry. Kendrick Perkins is good at this. Like, I would put him, if you were saying 10 other guys besides Draymond who are, like, good at this media
stuff. Yeah, but they don't like each other because Kendrick Perkins tried to fight Steph Curry a long time ago. Speaking of which, I wanted to, I heard a couple of funny stories this weekend. Kendrick Perkins said on the J.J. Redick, Old Man and the Three podcast, that one of the things that the Celtics did to settle beef between Rondo and Ray Allen is they had them get the boxing gloves on and just fight it out. Like, something that I don't think most workplaces can understand, this form of problem solving. And in doing some of the reporting around the Heat that we'll talk about in the local hour, and just listening to some of the stories about how Jimmy Butler will test and trample all personalities with his version of crazed because he doesn't mind these things getting physical, I was reminded of a time when the Knicks under Pat Riley, eventually things would escalate to the point where either Xavier McDaniel or Charles Oakley or Anthony Mason, they just have to fight. They would just have to get in the middle of the basketball court and fight. And the rule was, not boxing gloves, the rule was once someone goes down, no kicking, no anything once someone goes down. So one of these fights, I don't know which one it was, one of these fights with, I'm going to say it's Oakley and McDaniel, but it's one of these three, it's all of these three menaces. It made its way through the bleachers and everywhere else before, like, Patrick Ewing eventually ended up separating people. But what I learned that I did not know is that the one that nobody wanted any part of in those situations wasn't any of those three guys. It was Anthony Bonner.
What? Why?
I'm just telling you, I don't know why, but I'm just telling you that nobody wanted a piece of Anthony Bonner, that was the scary guy. All these other guys have the reputation. All three of the guys that I mentioned, Xavier McDaniel, Charles Oakley, and Anthony Mason had the reputation, but it was Bonner that everybody was afraid of.
I don't even know what Anthony Bonner looks like. I'm doing that purely based off his name. And what it makes me believe is that he must be a trained fighter of some sort.
I know what you're doing there, Woody. You're thinking of Matt Bonner and
yeah,
being like,
you know,
how?
Good shout.
How?
Good shout. That's 100% what I'm
doing. Bonner is not
in
Matt
my head,
Bonner.
I see Matt Bonner. That's what I see. I see Charles Oakley being like, I want no part of Matt Bonner.
That is so great. That no wonder you were so confused by that story when it became about Matt Bonner.
Well, Anthony Bonner looks much
totally different,
different
guy.
Wow.
I was half listening and I thought you guys were talking about Matt Bonner.
I love the idea that you guys had Charles Oakley, Anthony Mason, and Xavier McDaniel running scared from Matt Bonner. It's particularly funny because he's redheaded.
Yeah, why is it weird?
Looks like a big Chris.
I don't get this.
I'm looking at a recent picture of Anthony Bonner, and I would be more scared of him now than Charles Oakley in 1997.
You guys do realize that we've escalated to the portion of the proceedings in media coverage where we're talking about fights between Westbrook and Skip Bayless, a 70-year-old man. Westbrook is saying, do not call me Westbrook. You wouldn't do it to my face. And we're headed toward a situation where Skip's gonna do it to his face. And then where are we? You really want to see Westbrook beat the shit out of Skip Bayless?
And can I tell you something?
Sure.
Skip Bayless has bona fides in this area. He did it to Chris Bosh. I saw a clip of this get circulated again in the aftermath. So Skip Bayless used to call Chris Bosh, when he was playing poorly, Bosh Spice.
Oh, that's right.
And in 2011, he went on First Take, and Skip Bayless says, I do not regret, when you play poorly, calling you Bosh Spice.
After Chris Bosh had said...
It went on a whole soliloquy about how, you know, my name means a lot to me, and it means a lot to my family, and basically a lot of the same logic that Russell Westbrook is putting across now. Skip Bayless basically said, I hear ya, but I'm still going to call you Bosh Spice.
You guys do understand we're in a new place, though, right? We're in a new place where Kendrick Perkins is saying, Draymond, do you want to fight? These are not usual media things. This is not the way we usually do things in this sphere.
Dan, I've got it figured out, all right? You know I'm an idea guy, right?
I know that about you?
Yes, Dan. Tommy Fury, Jake Paul, happening very soon. Yep. Undercard, Kendrick Perkins, Draymond Green, Westbrook versus Skip Bayless. Who doesn't watch that?
Me.
You would not watch that?
All right, see,
you're
Whitty,
crazy.
You're lying.
You're lying. You're absolutely lying.
I know. I get what you're doing here. You're not for this like circus break. Stuff. You'd watch.
Kendrick versus Draymond in a ring with boxing gloves on. Who does not want to watch that?
Well, I'll watch the clips on
social later.
Oh, I'll watch the clips on social.
Do you want to? Don't you think that Bayless and Westbrook would feel like Pedro Martinez and Don Zimmer? Like you don't act. He's a 70-year-old man. Like what are we doing?
Skip Bayless would back himself, though. I really believe that. I think if a punch was thrown, I think he'd punch back. In a podcast studio. Now, in a boxing ring, you have to throw punches back. But I think in a podcast studio, if Westbrook leaped across the table and tried to start fighting him, I wonder. Now I'm thinking, is Skip Bayless working on his physique so much in the event that he has to one day physically defend his take?
I say we just play through. Just let the
play on.
Don't let the audience know that these alarms have been plaguing us all morning. Yes.
I can't hear anything at this point, so we might as well.
I you know what? I had never thought of that. That he has one day decided he might have to actually physically defend himself in Sports Takes. And so that's why he has beefed himself up to such a degree to prepare to defend his LeBron James opinion.
You say one day, he's always been a lunatic about fitness, but I've told you the story before, and this was before the ascent of Skip Bayless, really, that when he was covering the Dallas Cowboys, he wrote a book irresponsibly reporting from anonymous sources that Troy Aikman was gay, and Troy Aikman asked his attorneys what it would cost if he went into the locker room and just punched Skip Bayless in the face. And if the answer had been, and I don't remember the exact numbers on this, but if the answers had been it would be less than $1 million or less than $5 million, he says he would have done it. But Aikman had his remorse about working at the same network as Skip Bayless over some of this stuff. And
I don't want to judge it because there's plenty at this trough for a whole lot of people to do it a lot of different ways. But I do ask you guys and the audience, as an entertainment spectacle, how do you feel about these things escalating to a place where the athletes are threatening the media members? Because they all have their own power now. They all have their own platforms. And they don't have to just take it quietly from the media anymore. So if you're throwing popcorn at Westbrook, he's going to react. And if you're doing this, when Westbrook has asked you not to call him Westbrook, and furthermore, you're defiant Westbrook, who's averaged a triple-double, and you're an MVP in the league, and you are probably, for the first time in your life, actually doubting yourself at basketball. And now this guy's there to be a piranha, to be not helpful, and to invite you on his podcast so that you can help his podcast ratings.
Well, that's the thing that's so sad. Either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself invite someone on your podcast to argue with you. That appears to be what sports takeitude is right now. But it's just, for me, it's just so childish. Like, we're really going to sell this by fighting? And really, the precursor to all of this was when Stephen A. Smith looked into the camera and said, Kevin Durant, you don't want to make an enemy out of me. Like, it was like a looming threat. Like, what is that supposed to mean? And it's the direct call out it's just so bizarre. Like, I understand that we're in now a social media culture where everyone is looking for the fodder to motivate them, right? But the part where we can't just have a conversation on television about a sporting event without it getting this level of personal, it's so bizarre to me that it would resort to fighting.
It is very childish. It is very childish. I think we should move on to other things. He should fight fire with fire and call him shit Bayless.
Wow.
Or skip your show Bayless. You know what I mean? Something like, you got to fight fire with fire here. Yeah. Don't get physical. You come back at him. Let's create a name for Skip Bayless. Huh?
It's always lamer. It's always lamer. Like when
skip
people...
Skip your show Bayless. Pretty good. Yeah, good.
Like when Donald Trump did the thing of, this guy, you know, of giving everyone a nickname, and then John Oliver did Donald Drumpf, was apparently his old nickname, and so people started calling him Drumpf. It always became lame. Like, it never works to fight fire with fire when the fire is insults from a playground.
But I want to defend Skip a little here. This is such a ridiculous thing for Russell Westbrook to get seriously angry at. You know, it's just like, I mean, Westbrook. Like, it's just wordplay.
He should know by now, right?
It's one of those things where...
How about don't shoot 30%?
But you can't tell someone to not get upset about their family name, right? If that has significance to them, you can't tell someone that it doesn't matter. Now, it is an unbelievably childish insult, and in the grand scheme of things, means absolutely nothing. But, I don't know, like, I don't feel comfortable telling Russell Westbrook,
all the pros that come with being an athlete, all the money, all the fame, if you gotta deal with Westbrook, like, I get it. If it was more, like, egregious and, like, it's just so harmless.
Okay, you say that as the man who just got done telling us, why do the Lightning care so much as pucks fly to their face that they cry at the end? Like, yes, you want to be entitled to your things. I get that. I actually heard on satellite radio, forgive me here, because it was Andy Furman on with somebody, and they were talking about Kevin Durant and why Kevin Durant is so sensitive on Twitter, etc. And they were talking about the Bayless thing, and they just said it's part of the business. And I'm listening. I'm like, well, is it? Because you're saying that Westbrook just has to take this because it's part of the business. And then he said, we should do that. We should engage one of these athletes so they have to comment on it, and then we can get into a back and forth. And that part is not just dumb and dirty and silly. The rewards in this, if you engage one of these guys, if you piss them off, if you insult them so that we can have the conversation, he's making $47 million. Why do you care about being called Westbrook? That particular guy whose pride you have no doubts about.
And he shoots a lot of bricks. Like, that has to be irrelevant here. It's very clever because he's terrible at shooting. I just think there's a line on this stuff. And I don't think Westbrook crosses a line. I don't think it's worth of
threatened. Yeah, but there's a line. I understood.
Getting threatened.
The line for you is different for him.
That's true.
And again, he's not as confident as he has been. And he has asked people to please stop doing this.
But to your point about the new media, is that not largely what this is about? Like, the new media is about creating an environment in which those insults or the response of the athlete to, no, I will not just take this because it's part of my salary. Part of my salary is getting yelled at by fans. And basically, increasingly, the response is no to, in Kyrie Irving's case, basically being told, well, you have to show up for work in order to get your money. No, I will not show up for work in order to get my money. It's completely flipping the construct to be everything in the aspect of pro player. And I think, Dan, over the years, you've been very pro player. I'd find myself to be very pro player. But there are moments where it's like, that's sort of what the $47 million covers. It covers, you know, a massive amount of interest in this sport. Thus, people talk about this sport. Thus, sometimes people insult you. That's what the money's for.
It is an unwritten part of the contracts that as a professional, you're not the one who climbs into the stands and reacts to this stuff. But after a pandemic and after those guys not wanting to perform in the bubble and the disgrace and the indignity of, yes, making a lot of money, but churning through it after George Floyd in a way that made them all a little uncomfortable as a black league, you start adding all of that stuff on top of each other, and Westbrook has now been the meat shield again for many years in that sport, but with the Lakers, he's getting all the blame for the stuff that's happening there. And again, he's the guy that when the pandemic, when we returned to some form of play, somebody threw popcorn at him, and he wasn't having that. Like, he's not the one for this. He's not going to just eat it in the name of professionalism, in the name of he's asked people, please don't call me Westbrook. Now, I don't know why he doesn't reach out to Skip personally and tell him to stop doing that, as opposed to feeding the monster, because now we all end up talking about it, and we all end up talking about how much is an athlete supposed to eat here, because I don't disagree with you, Chris. He should be professional above it, not engage, and it would be better for all parties. But if he's hurt at the end of what the last 12 years have been in that sport, when Kyrie and Durant are about to ruin the Nets in record time with what happens if you give the players all the power, if you give it all to them, the dangers of that. Westbrook is out here, and he's telling you at the end of his career that he's going to be just as defiant in all of it. And the thing that I'm presenting to you guys and asking the audience as well, is this how you want your media? Because we like the soap opera stuff and guys escalating to a place where they want to fight. That's not bad as us consuming it in entertainment. We love in this sport the beef. We love the soap opera. We love the personality conflicts. Westbrook is famous because he's polarizing and he bumps up against it in every locker room. And people understand, wow, that superstar is a little bit difficult to understand. Doesn't smile a lot. Doesn't laugh a lot. Seems like he's hissing and competitive. What do I know about him? He plays really hard and, you know, he's a meat shield for criticism next
plays
to superstars.
Plays with a perpetual middle finger, I would say. That's his modus operandi is just middle finger.
So does
all
Draymond.
The time.
And so does Draymond, who is revolutionizing, modernizing the modern day Barkley, because Barkley was not like this. Barkley had his polarizations, but Barkley ultimately was likable. Barkley would slap you on the back, get along with people. He was in on the joke. Draymond's not like that. And he's the manifestation of what has happened over all of it. Over the last 25 years, the modern day Barkley is going to be with a middle finger. It's going to be less nice than Charles Barkley can be.
Don't you have to be a little likable, though? Like, I think Draymond won't do as well in this career as we think he might do. I think he's going to be honest.
He's already started off incredibly well,
yeah,
though.
But I just think when over the long haul, he's not going to be as likable. Like, I agree with everything Dan just said. There's something different. While everyone's anointing him the next Barkley, there's just some, like, Barkley's just got this quality to him that
no, but
I
gonna
agree.
It's going to be the modern, it's going to be... Man, I was on a street corner in Philadelphia, two competing newspapers holding up the Barkley headlines on the street. Barkley, colon, I'm a 90s N-word, is what it said across both newspaper headlines. He was on Chains and Sports Illustrated. He, too, was polarizing. Now he's gotten older, and it's a smile and a wink, and he's in on the joke. But Barkley's nice to people and isn't trying to fight everybody. He files it under honesty and says you got to deal with it, but... It is softer than 30 years later what Draymond is doing. Barkley also, a lot better player than Draymond ever was. And Draymond is making a career for himself as a third person on a team as a third person on a team, which rarely you can't, you, it doesn't happen very often. And I do believe he says things that are inflammatory enough that in the modern age, as angry as it is, as acidic as it is, this becomes what Barkley looks like 30 years later. If you keep pouring all of this lighter fluid and fertilizer on it from Skip Bayless is going to be attacking Westbrook. And the result is now Draymond's like, no, I'm coming for all your jobs. I'm not here to take gruff off of any of you.
I think this is, so Draymond is basically Charles Barkley who reads his replies, essentially, yeah. Right? It's someone who lives day in and day out, minute in and minute out in the criticism of you. What I'm fascinated by is that Draymond Green, for the moment, is positioning himself as new media. How long does one get to be new media before you eventually become old media? Because at a certain point, you become more known for being, like Charles Barkley, in my opinion, I know more about him as a broadcast than I do as a basketball player. And I think Charles Barkley, to a younger generation, including Kevin Durant, who said, you're just jealous of us because we made more money than you did. And I think to a lot of modern players, Charles Barkley represents old media and the thing that they're trying to replace. Well, presumably at some point, Draymond Green is going to have to get by on the charisma that he has. I think as a very good television personality, I don't agree with you guys. I think this is like, this is acidic competitor, not who he is as a person. I think as a television personality, Draymond Green will come across as much more likable and has when he's done inside the NBA. But at a certain point, you have to develop that character of who you are as a television personality. And I don't think it's going to be centered around the fundamental basketball analysis where you're teaching us things about how you played the game. No, it's going to be about starting fights with people and just eventually resorting to
He can do both, and he can do it for 25 years.
The thing is, we don't go to Barkley for basketball analysis, right? We go for the fight. We go for him and Shaq goofing around.
He's a character.
Who do we want that gives us basketball analysis? Like, who's the person that you go to for X's and O's?
But Barkley doesn't give off like he's trying to pick a fight with someone. He just is like, he's going to be completely honest. Whereas Draymond so just kind of feels like he's trying to be polarizing.
Draymond cares less, I think, how you receive his anger, defiance. And Barkley doesn't care very much, but I just think Barkley's softer. Am I wrong in saying that? Because
I think so. I mean, Draymond Green will forever, in his mind, as a basketball competitor, be the guy that was drafted 35th overall and had basically a stroke of luck in Steve Kerr randomly deciding to start him from the beginning because Mark Jackson didn't play him very much. And his career is a surprise. But I think he'll always carry that around with him. And again, I do think that every basketball player that is active on social media reads their replies. Steve Kerr even said it himself to Zach Lowe after they won the championship. Every one of these guys knows what's said about them all the time, everywhere. And it affects them. And it affects someone who we don't even view in this way, which is Steph Curry, right? Steph Curry, who eventually said, you know, what are you going to say now? It was a narrative that built in his head, never really vocalized it, but a narrative that built in his head based off of everyone talking about the finals MVP. I don't think we can underestimate what reading your Twitter replies does to your psyche. And I really believe that Draymond Green, coming from a place of perhaps even doubting himself, to then having an incredibly successful basketball career off the back of it, how much receiving that criticism affects him.
I think we receive the criticism here as a show, right? Like, yeah. You're on your own thing. Imagine that 100-fold on people watching you, millions of people watching you, and you messing up, and then those replies after the locker room, and you're reading them. I think this entire generation of the NBA and sports in general has been molded by social media. It's hardened and jaded them so much that it's like, they have to be this. There's no other way for them to be.
I think that as you read these reports and studies about young people harming themselves more than they used to or being unhappier than they've been, part of it is the toxicity of that thing that's not real feeling real all the time, which is the anonymous things people could say in the stands or behind your back at all times. But you had to be in front of, as a reporter, you had to go confront in the locker room once upon a time, if you were going to write these things, Westbrook, you couldn't do it from afar. You had to go into the locker room and answer for what it is that you were doing. And that's part of what is splintering here. So many people saying so many things without governance, anonymously, cruelly, as Kevin Durant smokes dope in his home and just reads through all of it, partially addicted to this stuff, and becomes a superstar that seems a hell of a lot less happy than the other ones, given how great he is. Because, of course, it's going to distort these people to now be hearing everything everyone is saying from every angle when you made a decision, a business choice, to go to Golden State and try to please those people by, you say, I can't win a championship. Okay, I'll go over here and win a championship. And it just blew up in his face.
And to your question earlier about how do you feel about this and how would you feel about if there was an actual fight at some point between a media member and an athlete, it's just a slow erosion of what feels normal. At one point, as you said, you wrote a column in a newspaper and you had to defend it. And slowly over time, as we saw web traffic be the main metric by which you measure writers, there was a recognition that, oh, if I say the most controversial thing, even if I don't necessarily believe it, there is money, there is profit in this, and I don't need to necessarily care about the institution of the take, the institution of writing. I'm going to progress in my career by taking whatever lane is available. And slowly but surely, as everyone started to realize this, it only gets escalated. It's never de-escalated. No one ever goes at one point, all right, let's stop with the hot takes. Let's stop with trying to piss athletes off to make money. Let's all stop. Let's recognize what we're doing here, and let's get back to some decency. It's only going to escalate. And so if there is ever an actual fistfight between Kendrick Perkins and Draymond Green, then maybe the next one is in a cage. It's a UFC match. Like, that's not an end point. That's a starting point.
It makes it all. It reminds me of the Barkley quote of the locker room when he says, the locker room is racist, sexist, homophobic, and I miss it, is what Barkley's quote is. When I listen to what it is that you're saying, everything is made dumber, smaller, crueler, and I kind of love it. And I don't feel good about myself for saying that. But if I could step back from it and be like, wow, this is dumb. Really, this is where we're going. After Rachel Nichols flames out at ESPN, the first voice we're going to is Kendrick Perkins to talk about that publicly. Okay, Kendrick Perkins is in charge now. And what's in charge now? He wants to go fight Draymond. All right, let's see where that ends up. Because what Kendrick Perkins has done there, now Paul Pierce left ESPN because they didn't like what he was doing on social media. Kendrick Perkins just said, I'm going to put my job down over here. And he did not, like, this is, it's crossed the line. Once Draymond calls Kendrick Perkins what he called him, this is where it gets crueler. You have to keep pushing it. Draymond's thinking about, what are the things I need to do? Who do I need to engage? Draymond likes conflict, enjoys it. Kendrick doesn't seem to mind it. And now you're here for the entertainment in it, but I do want you to know it is dumber. We're all dumber for it. We're all smaller for it. And we are all crueler for enjoying it.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike. And typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right. You crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication isn't covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelte may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelte?
Just text.
Text THIN to 200-300 to get started today with Zelte and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text THIN to 200-300. That's THIN to 200-300. THIN to 200-300.